You're listening to Hooked on Creek, a podcast celebrating the music, history, and fans of the legendary jam band, Max Creek. I am your host, Corey Johnson, and you are listening to episode 63.
Step off the side of the road. What do you think I see?
Thanks for joining me on Hooked on Creek. In this episode, I'm excited to welcome back John Spignesi to the podcast. It's been over 5 years since John last joined me on this podcast, and he has been busy making a lot of music with the John Spignesi Band since we last talked, including working on the band's seventh studio album. In this episode, John provides a behind-the-scenes look at his band's new album, produced by Scott Murrowski from Max Creek. He shares what it was like working with Scott in the studio and how Scott's guidance shaped both the process of recording and the sound of the album. John also reflects on collaborating with Mark Mercier in the studio, as well as his experiences playing alongside members of Max Creek outside of the studio. In fact, this episode kicked off with a clip of the John Spignesi Band performing their song, Feelin' Free, live with special guest Scott Murrowski at Hoops and Hops in Simsbury, Connecticut, back on November 16th, 2024. In addition to his band's new studio album, John talks about the friendships, collaborations, and sense of community that fuel his music, and he opens up about the powerful role music continues to play in his life. I had a great time catching up with John, and I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation. Now, to add just a little flavor to this episode, I also included a few more clips of the John Spignesi Band performing live, but I encourage you to check out Spotify or Apple Music to hear the studio versions of the songs coming out on the new John Spignesi Band album. I think you are really going to enjoy what this band has created. All right, now here's my conversation with John Spignesi. John Spignesi, welcome back to Hooked on Creek.
Corey, it's been a while, man. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's been over 5 years since we last spoke back on episode 9. So I'm curious, John, what's new in your world right now?
Well, we went through a pandemic and we went through quite a bit since 2019. I just want to say, too, before we go any further, too, I've been following your podcast since even prior to the first time I was on it, too. And it's awesome, man, that you're still doing it. And I listen every episode. So hats off to you to begin. I want to say that first.
Thank you.
Since 2019, been playing a lot, working on a new album, collaborating with a lot of other people, too. Really enjoying, I would say, the community process a little more these days. You know, as opposed to back in 2019, and just like tapping into like all the wonderful networking that I've been able to do.
Maybe for our listeners, sort of reintroduce us to the John Spignesi Band. Who's in the band? How long have you been around?
Sure. 10 years this year in 2025. We've got a ways to go to catch up to 54 for Max Creek, but you know, we'll get there when we can. But it's 10 years, I don't think it's anything to shake off to. I'm pretty proud that we've been able to kind of been at it that long. It's myself on guitar and vocals, Joe Jeffrey on bass and vocals, and then Matt Alling on drums, who is also a founding member with me. Quick little story that I'm sure you will appreciate here. The band was not supposed to be named after myself. And I know you're probably like, yeah, okay. But allow me to just briefly explain. So I was in a band prior to JSB called Off the Dome. And we were called Off the Dome because we'd make stuff up off the top of our heads. We had a lot of improvisation, you know, a la jam band style. Our singer for that band worked in a hospital. He worked as a pharmacy technician, but he had like crazy hours because he was new, right? So he didn't have any sort of regimented schedule. So his, you know, 1 week he'd be working 12 to 12. Next week he'd be working like 6 to 9. So we would have these like periods of time where we couldn't play. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. Like, I can't like, you know, go through these stints of like not having music. So our original bass player, Bob LaCroix, he was a local guy, lived in the same town as me. He's like, oh, we could do like a band if you want to do something like just a local thing to like, what did he say? Keep your chops up. And I was like, oh, sure. So I go, all right, what do you want to call it? He goes, oh, no, I already have the name. And I was like, what? He goes, we're going to call it the John Spignesi Band. And I was like, I don't want to name it after myself. Why are we going to name a band after myself? He goes, well, if I name it after you, I could just show up and play and you got to bear all the responsibility.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, all right, screw it, whatever. Like 5 years later, Bob's like, hey, man, I'm moving to Maryland. Sorry, I got to quit the band. I'm like, okay, now I'm stuck with the band. It's named after myself. The guy who made me name it after myself isn't in the band anymore. So here, long story short, here I am 10 years later. And so it's the worst thing ever when I go to check in at a festival and they're like, what band are you in? And I'm like, the John Spignesi Band. And they're like, and who are you? I'm like, John Spignesi. So
I think it worked out for you. You can wear your own band's t-shirt and you're like promoting your band and you're introducing yourself at the same time.
I guess that's true. And I get to see all the mispronunciations, but you nailed it, man. You nailed it on the first try. Nobody ever does. So.
Well, John, I understand you're working on your seventh album now, and Scott Murawski is a producer on the album. I want to dig into that, but before we do, maybe just reflect a little bit on the last six albums and the process to get to this point.
In the beginning, it was all about creating music where it felt like you were in the room with us. You know what I mean? I wanted it to feel like you walked into the room and then the band was in there playing for you. And that was honestly my mindset from 2017 when we did the first record all the way up until the pandemic pretty much. And honestly, and I will give him his kudos, I'm sure, as it goes on. But Scott actually taught me a lot about, like, you know, you can almost have a different mindset when you go into the studio as opposed to playing live. You know, you can layer all of these sounds, you can add all of these different instrumentations. And then obviously, of course, when you play it live, people will see what kind of band you really are and what you bring to these songs. I will say recording is my least favorite and favorite thing at the same time. I know that you need to do it in order to stay relevant, because that's how people discover music. You know, I'm big on Spotify. I know people love Spotify and all of that kind of stuff. Just the process itself is like terrifying to me, because it's just, you know, I mean, we're all our own worst critic. I'm sure you listen to episodes of your own podcast. You're like, why did I phrase that question that way? Why did I talk like that? I listen to things like we've released four songs off this album so far. And like, I'm texting my band members. I'm like, at 1:46, dude, I hit a clam. And they're like, nobody cares, dude. Nobody cares. Nobody knows what you're talking about. But so it's a double-edged sword, but it's fun. It's a fun process. And I'm every single time we do it, because we've been working with the same guy since the beginning, and, you know, in the studio, with the exception of one short little EP release, I learn more and more every single time. And it helps me grow. And like I said, the networking is a big part. The best thing about this album is that, like, you know, it's our band, but I've recruited so many of my friends to just play on this album, and I'm so proud. I'm like, I'm showing other people, and I'm like, that's my buddy playing right there. You know what I mean? So.
Well, where are you right now in the overall production process? Are you done with the album? Almost done? Where are you at, I guess, in this?
So it's completely done. It's completely mixed. I have like the masters, everything. I've been analyzing how people listen to music. And fortunately, a lot of people don't listen to just full albums anymore. We listen to full shows because we're jam band freaks and we can listen to 2.5 hours without hesitating. I know you're the same way too. But for me, I realize, you know, people's attention span just isn't what it used to be. I mean, look at social media and look at all these kind of things. If you don't hook people within the first like 3 seconds, you ain't going to get a listener. So I approached our sound engineer and I was like, I can't get crickets after we release this, after all the hard work that everybody put into it. I'm just like, it's going to drive me nuts if, you know, we release this whole thing and I get like 2 listeners on it. So he's like, well, each song tells its own story. Each song is unique in itself. Why don't you release one song every 5 weeks? And so that's what we've been doing. I started it in, I want to say April. We released the first track, Blank Canvas, and then Feeling Free, Mystery Man, which you've heard. The next track comes out like mid-August. So it's been fun because I can kind of focus on each individual song and tell its unique story and create social media content based around that one song, as opposed to just trying to create one thing that encapsulates the whole album. Will it work? I don't know.
Paint a picture on the wall. What do you think it means? Take a step and look it over.
Well, where did these songs come from? I mean, were they in your head or in your live performances for many years? Or, you know, where did you source this material from?
One thing that we've always tried to do is we road test everything. You know, so some of these songs, I think Mystery Man goes all the way back to 2017 or 2018. We got to play them and, you know, arrange them kind of and learn about how they work well live in order to make a better studio performance. So most of these we've been playing for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years before we even got into the studio. In the studio as well, time is money. You know, I can't be trying to remember what my part is while we're trying to record, because I'm going to end up, you know, breaking the bank even more than I already am. So when we come in there, it's just like everybody knows the part. We can knock out like 3 or 4 takes without even breaking a sweat. It's just because we've been playing it for so long. You know what I mean? Then, you know, we'll add different things afterwards and layers, that kind of stuff. But the goal always is to get the bare bones take first. And that's something that we learned right before the pandemic hit, that if we can play together in the room, the guitar, the bass, the drums first, get the feel of the song, all the layers and stuff afterwards will only enhance it, because the energy is already there. We already got that bare bones take. We already got that the vibe there. That's the process so far.
So how long did it take from maybe your first recording session until you said it's done or it became done? How long does that process take for this album?
2 years.
Is that normal or too long? No. Not long enough?
No. So Scott joked to me in, I want to say, right when COVID hit, he was like, looking forward to producing that album. It was like, we had talked about it briefly. I don't know if it was in jest, but you know, I'm the type of person where like, you said it, I'm gonna take you up on it. And so he said to me, he goes, well, if you want somebody that's deaf and has never produced before, I'm your guy. I was like, well, if you want a band that trusts the guy who's deaf and has never produced before, we're your band. So he came over to our bass player's house. We did like a rehearsal session. He just the littlest things that he recommended, never once offered to, you know, change the song. Didn't want to do that because then it wouldn't sound like us anymore. But he knew these little things that we could do. You know, why don't you accent that certain part right here? Why don't, you know, that chord change right there? Be a measure behind it instead of on top of it. Little things like that added so much just in the rehearsal. Then we got into the studio and, you know, he threw his headphones on and he walked us through the entire process. We had one song, Tough Guy, took 15 takes to get because he added this really cool recommendation to it. But the arrangement, the song itself is only like 2 minutes and 40 seconds, but it doesn't stop moving the entire time. I have it on video. That's the other thing too. I recorded this entire process on video of us. So I have like gigabytes and gigabytes of footage. Maybe I'll do a Get Back style documentary one day. It's going to take forever to kind of go through all this, but very helpful.
Well, help me understand, because I really don't know this. What is the role of a producer on an album? And then tell me more about Scott's role, but just generally, what does a producer normally do helping an artist like you in a studio?
I think the main thing is to help create whatever vision kind of come to life. You know, our main goal was we're always trying to push ourselves. I got to say, I haven't talked about them enough, but my two band members, Joe and Matt, are just like two of the friendliest, most like dedicated guys I could ask for. My drummer, he lives up in New Hampshire and he drives hours and hours to come, you know, just for gigs. And my bass player is also a teacher too. And so he's off in the summer with me and we hit the road and we just go. And they're just always thinking of different ways to kind of get the music out there. But in terms of the producer itself, you know, Scott understood that, again, he didn't want to change who we were. He didn't want to, you know, he could have easily been like, well, you know, I work with Mike Gordon, so this is going to sound like a Mike Gordon album. But he didn't want to do that. And I play in Max Creek. I'm going to make this sound like a Max Creek album. Didn't want to do that either. He wanted it to sound like us. And so he knew that, you know, we had the songs and he liked the songs and he knew that we were going to play them to the best of our ability. But there was a certain energy that he brought into the studio too. And, you know, we've loved his playing, you know, for years. So like even him just being in there kind of put a little more pep in the step. You know what I mean? So he's just a fun guy to be around.
Well, credit to your relationship to Scott to present this opportunity to you. Has your relationship with him or your understanding of him as a musician changed as you've seen him in this other role?
Yeah. I mean, he's a workhorse, man. And he thinks of everything, and he's just got such a great mind when it comes to like listening to music and analyzing. He's another one. I mean, he approaches it from the listener's perspective. You never want to let anything go on for too long. That was always the biggest thing he would always say to me. Like, you can't go on for too long. Got to keep it moving. Got to keep it interesting and all that. You know, we had one part in the song. It went on for 8 measures. He's like, how about 4 instead? You know, just cutting it down, trimming the fat, so to speak. And then obviously, you know, his body of people that he knew and networking was incredible. I mean, he recommended the horn players from West End Blend, who just, I believe, sat in with Creek recently. They came down, they played on a couple tracks. Sammy Garrett from the band Turquoise, she came down. Mark, of course, Mark Mercier played on a couple tracks too. He's very easy to work with because I never once felt like he was judging or, you know, trying to tell us what to do or trying to dictate that it had to be a certain way because his name was on it. I very much appreciated the perspective. And I had never worked with a producer before either. That's the thing. I mean, our recording engineer is like another member of the band, but he's also, you know, he's behind the computer and he's trying to, you know, do a couple things at once. So this almost freed him up a little more too. He got to focus just on the recording aspect. And like I said, Scott was able to just kind of have the headphones on and be out there, you know, in the quote unquote field, so to speak, like working with us and tightening it up and, you know, making it sound as good as possible.
So take me into this studio first. You know, which studio are you at? Who's in the room with you? Describe it for me.
Yeah, sure. Ace Tone Productions is the name of it. And the sound engineer is Matt Terabile. His big thing, he didn't have a studio for the longest time. I met him through a local Grateful Dead cover band, Shakedown, and their guitar player was in the midst of trying to record his own solo album. And Matt's big thing was mobile recording. You know, he could come to your garage and make it sound like a studio. He could come to your basement and try to make it sound like a studio. That was his thing. And I was like, that's cool, but like, I don't really want to do that. So like 6 months later, he hits me up and he's like, all right, I got like a place now. You want to come actually record? And I was like, okay. And so you walk in and it's awesome. There's, you know, giant like green room type of area where there's, you know, couches, and he's got this old vintage stereo system. That's always my favorite part. When the album is done, you sit on the couch and he plays your record through his old vintage stereo. So you get to just hear it in all its glory. It's got the, you know, the dynamic speaker. So you got to sit in a certain area in order to get the best sound. My favorite, the walls are like burnt orange. I don't even know how. I'll have to send you a picture. But it's so unique because, first of all, I've never been in a room, I don't think, that has colors like that. But it adds to the energy. It adds to the energy of the room. You know, it's bright and it kind of fires you up a little bit. The recording area itself is very big. You know, the drums are off. Nothing is separated from itself. The drums are kind of in the corner. There's a bass rig over to the right, and then the guitar rig is over to the left. And he's got a nice vocal booth too. He's upgraded tremendously since I met him. But it's such a great room. It really is.
So when you're recording a song, are you more often playing together at the same time or recording your parts individually and then, you know, layering each band member's part over it? Or does it depend? Or how does that work, I guess?
In the beginning, we did it all separately and we hated it. I hated it so much. It just, you know, the bass and the drum. Actually, I think the bass and the drums got to record together. And then I was like off to the side, like the wicked stepchild. Like I got to record like afterwards. And I was like, hey, over here, like, you know, my name's on this. What's going on here? But, you know, I quickly realized that, again, with jam bands and with rock music, the energy of playing off each other is unmatched. You got to be together. So now it is always together. We track, like I said, we track the guitar, bass, and drums first. We get the raw kind of things. I mime the vocals, or we have like a scratch vocal track where it's not our actual vocals, but just for cues, those kind of purposes. You know, it's really funny. Scott sent me a recording. You just hear me just going, chorus. All right, here we go. Verse. All right, bridge. Chorus. And I was like, please delete that like immediately. but always together, because you just, you, like you said, you get a better take out of it. And I don't think I would do it any other way at this point.
Do you think some ideas are going to work in the studio, but after just trying and trying, you just set them aside and move on? Or how does that work as a creative person in the studio?
And the opposite too. I mean, there was definitely, we have one song, it's called Prepare for Liftoff, and I think the album is going to end up being called that as well. And it was just kind of, it's a funk tune, but it was just kind of like going the entire time through. And our drummer, I think he just went to go like to the gas station across the street to like get snacks. And the bass player and I were just kind of like messing around. And I literally on the spot created a like slow down section in the middle of the song that we referred to as the orbit, prepare for liftoff, right? So you're like, you're in space and all that. Our drummer came back in and he was like, this does not sound like the song that it was when I left. And that was something that we created on the spot in 30 seconds. So sometimes, you know, spontaneous things will come to you. Sometimes, like I said, they don't work. I mean, I had in a couple of other songs, I had a solo that I must have done like 7 takes on. And I was just like getting so incredibly frustrated. And Scott just leans forward and he goes, dude, we got like 6 good takes. Like, you're like, I can Frankenstein stuff. You know what I mean? Like you're stressing yourself out over absolutely nothing. And I was like, all right. So then the next day he goes, just for fun, with no worries at all, with no pressure at all, not to get it, not to do anything. That's when we ended up using, you know what I mean? Things like that. It works, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did I see something in the credits of Mystery Man that Scott played keys on the album? When I saw that, I was a little surprised. I didn't know he was a keyboard player, but in addition to being a producer, did he play instruments on some of the songs?
Yep. Yeah. He played. So he ended up actually mixing the album as well. I don't even know if that was his intention to begin with. It was funny that we got the mixes and the sound engineer went to mix, and then he was like, let me do a mix just for the hell of it. And I was like, okay. He did one, and I was like, dude, your mix is really good. And he's like, no, you're just saying that. I was like, why don't you try like mixing another song and another song? Before I know it, he's like just mixing the entire album. And so I went over to his house. He's about, I would say about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from me, not far at all, like multiple weekends. And we'd go up there and just experiment with sounds. And he's got in his basement, he's got a great little kind of mini studio set up, and he's got like a little MIDI keyboard in front of him. And he would add like little things on top of that and sing, and just sing right there, harmonies and those kind of things just on the spot. It was really cool to watch. It was also, I can't believe I didn't shout him out. One of the biggest, supporters is my best friend, Will Jakubiak. And he's been there since the beginning, and we refer to him as our road manager, because he shows up to every gig, and he hauls stuff across state lines for us, and he's awesome. So he was there almost the entire time while we were recording too, and was just a huge part of the energy. I can't stress enough that the energy of the room is of the most importance, because if somebody's annoyed, if somebody's pissed off, or just kind of like having a bad day, it's going to come out in the music. You know, you could fake your smile through it the entire time, or you could be as tight a musician as you are, but like, it's going to feel off just a little bit when you listen to it. It's hard for me to explain, but that is probably the most important thing. And so we made sure while we were recording that we were all like in the best of mindsets, I guess I would say, while we were doing it, and wanted to make sure that, again, we would get the best product out of it too. So we also encouraged everybody who came in, all of our session musicians. We had Mark Mercier come in, Mike Bufundo, John Mundy from West End Blend, Sammy Garrett, and all them, to just fill the space as much as possible. And what I mean by that was, you know, Mark made a joke, and I have it on video. He's like, watch out. Like, I'll take every fill if you let me. And I was like, no, Scott was like, no, I want you to. Like, we're going to pick and choose, and we're going to like pull stuff in and pull stuff out too. So in the past, we, you know, we had just been like, no, you only play at 46 seconds until 1 minute. Now, not the case at all. We had, you know, we had almost too much stuff, but it was good because anytime that we were like, oh, we got to like, you know, this is getting monotonous. It's just going. Like, we got to fill this space somehow. We had so much stuff to pull out. Oh, there's a keys fill right here. Oh, there's a horn fill right here. Oh, the singer did something really cool here. So that was, again, a new change, a welcome change, something that we had never done in the past too. So
somebody who has created an album, well, 7 albums now, what is this for you? Is this like your little baby, your special thing? Like, what is your relationship now with this piece of work that you've created?
I mean, I think every person, artist, musician, anything, is always trying to top their last, right? And, you know, I'm sure it sounds cliche when you're like, this is my absolute best, but it really is, because I feel like I've grown so much, even in since the time that I started talking to you, you know, in 2019, so much has changed, you know, professionally and personally since then. I've always been, and this might be hard to believe, but I've always been a little reserved and a little shy with approaching people and those kind of things. It's just something that, you know, even to this day, I worry a lot about, you know, how I'm going to be perceived and those kind of things. I'm a high energy dude. I understand that. I get it. You know what I mean? But for me, you know, being able to tap into my network of friends and being like, hey man, I'm really like, this song really means a lot to me, and your playing, I think, would serve the song very well, and you being a part of this would really mean a lot to me too. And that's honestly how I approach it. Would have probably never done that in the past. And probably out of fear of being like, you know, who's this guy? I don't play on his stuff. But I was like, I don't care at this point. You know what I mean? And the reason being, because I believe the song deserves it. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but I believe that the songs are good enough to have some of these people on them. You know, I mean, I think Mark Mercier is such an incredible keyboard player, and like, to have, you know, first of all, it's an honor of mine to have his playing on an official thing. That's another thing too. Our keyboard player, since we last talked, unfortunately he passed away in like 2022. But I have 247 recordings of his playing on archive. I could just like go listen to it at any point. You know, that's a beautiful thing. So it's like creating a legacy in the sense of, you know, I've got these great and extremely talented and who could run circles around me, musician friends that can play incredible music. So like, why would I not take advantage of it at this point, you know?
Is there a song on this album that's special to you? And if so, why?
Mystery Man probably is one of the most important ones. In 2018, my wife and I, we were leaving a Dead & Company show in Hartford. And we were walking down the street, and we were going to there's an after party happening at this bar, Black Eyed Sally's, about a block or two away. And I noticed as we're walking down the street that everybody's kind of like veering off the sidewalk and like going into the street and then getting back on the sidewalk. And I was like, it's really weird. What's going on? And we get over and I see this guy's laying like face down. And I was like, oh, it's a deadhead. He's partying, whatever. And so I get a little closer and I see that he overdosed. And so that's another thing. I mean, that kind of stuff, it's a core. That's unfortunately what, you know, made our keyboard player pass away too. So it holds a special place in my heart. I feel drawn to like help people of those kind of things. So I ran down the street. I got the cops. They came over. They shot him up with Narcan, and you know, they got him on his feet. They took him away. I never learned his name. That's why I named the song The Mystery Man. But I mean, to this day, it more than anything just pisses me off how many people just walked by him and didn't say anything. You know what I mean? I can't get down with stuff like that. It doesn't cost anything to just be like a decent human being.
Save on your
they're all important songs. That one definitely holds sentimental value too. And Blank Canvas, that was the first song. I mean, that one's all about starting over, which I feel like we are with this one. Like I said, tapping into the network and the community and those kind of things too. So
for a listener who may not be familiar with your music and who's maybe listening to this podcast or checking out some of these new songs, what do you want fans of yours to know about you from this album? Is there a message you want them to take away or a feeling?
It's okay to not have all the answers. I think that's probably the most important thing. I'm guilty of that myself in terms of, you know, always wanting to say the right thing or do the right thing or, you know, be that person for somebody else. But like, we're all human, and it doesn't, imperfection is okay. And that's something I'm coming to terms with too, you know, and working with all these wonderful people and teaching too. I'm a middle school teacher, and like, that's something I'm trying to teach the kids too. Like, it's okay not to have all the answers. And that's, if anything you take away from this kind of music, I hope that's something that's like, hey man, like there's other people out there that don't get it either. And that's okay. You know? So
do your students know that you're a performing musician?
Oh, they do. And they found me. Oh yeah. On YouTube. So we just, over the summer, we played our local town festival in Brantford, Connecticut. It was like the coup de grace, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to play this my entire life. And they usually get, like, you know, Aerosmith cover bands. And this year the headliner was a Bon Jovi tribute band called Don Jovi. And that's, they were great. They were awesome. I also realized how not well-versed I am in the Bon Jovi catalog, but that's besides the point. So we opened up for them and all of my students came. There were so many of them. They were sitting in the grass in front of us, just like screaming. It's in between every song. Like, I don't know, my throat would be killing me if I screamed like this, but they're 12. So, yeah.
Well, another thing I noticed since we last talked is you've had plenty of more opportunities to play with members of Max Creek in a variety of settings. Can you tell me some of your more special sort of opportunities to sit in or play with members of Max Creek? Give me some idea of what that's like for you.
You know, a band in 54 years in, you know, to be able to play a small part in that is like a huge honor too. One of the highlights probably was the beginning of this year, January. JSB was opening for Barely Dead. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're a Grateful Dead cover band. Very unique. Like, there's no distinguished Jerry and all that. They just kind of take the tunes and run with them. We go to open for them. My drummer, Matt, I think he got COVID or something. Couldn't make it. I was like, all right. Called him, my friend Chris Andrews, who plays in the band Something Is Swarming. He goes, yeah, I'll do it. Week later, he's like, I got COVID too. I'm like, oh my God. So now I'm like, thinking it's going to be me and Joe. And me and Joe have done, you know, the duo thing. And I was like, but that's not really the energy. Like, we're opening for Barely Dead at like a nice little theater. It's a giant stage. Like, it's not going to be the right vibe. So then I'm like looking, and I asked Bill Carbone. I go, this is a long shot. I go, Bill, you want to play? He goes, what's the date? I tell him the date. He goes, with Barely Dead? I go, yeah. He goes, I'm playing with Barely Dead that night. He was already on the gig. I was like, oh my God. I said, well, do you want to do double duty? He goes, yeah, sure. Why not? So then maybe a week or so leading up to it, I text Scott. I go, oh, Bill's playing with me. He goes, where? I go, Barely Dead. He goes, oh, I'm playing with that too. I go, you want to play with us too? He goes, yeah, sure. So he came up and played like a majority of the set with us too. I mean, it's just so funny. I always joke that it's one big band, especially in our state. I mean, Connecticut's not that big to begin with, but it's one big band. Everybody knows everybody too. I mean, that was incredibly awesome.
Well, John, for fans who want to learn more about your band, the John Spignesi Band, where can they find you online, or where can they find your band performing?
Everything is jsbmusic.net. That's the website where all the tour dates are, and all of our merch and all everything else, and videos that link to YouTube. I try to upload at least one highlight from every single show, a song that we feel best encapsulates, you know, the performance and that kind of stuff too. But if you go right to our website, jsbmusic.net, you'll see that we have quite an array of dates kind of coming up too. It winds down a little bit in the fall, but then we ramp up again in the spring and the summer. We're all teachers. So once school gets out, we kind of just go, you know.
John, you clearly have a passion for music, and I'm curious, why is music such a big part of your life?
For me, I always wanted to feel connected to people. I'm a big people person. I like my alone time. There's like a bit of a lone wolf in me, but I also really need people because they help me grow and those kind of things. So music for me was a way of connecting with people and, you know, being able to share art with people and being able to, you know, have their art shared with me. Yeah, I almost feel like, you know, when you listen to music or when you play music, you're tapping into a different part of your brain that maybe you wouldn't necessarily say vocally or those kind of things. And you there's a different person in you that kind of comes out too. So for me, that's super important and something I always want to continue to have, I guess.
John Spignesi, thank you so much for joining me on Hooked on Creek. It's just been so much fun talking with you.
Corey, thanks for having me, man. And again, I appreciate all you're doing for this podcast, and I hope you'll make your way out again and come see Max Creek again soon, for sure.
I will, and I'm going to see the John Spignesi band. It'll be fun.
Maybe it'll be a you know, a double bill. Then it'll be like a 2-for-1 special, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, man.
Big thanks to John Spignesi for taking the time to join me on the podcast. It was a lot of fun reconnecting with John and hearing all about his band's new album, the recording process, and his relationship with Scott Murawski. If you are curious, this episode featured clips of the following songs performed live by the John Spignesi Band. Feelin' Free, performed at Hoops and Hops in Simsbury, Connecticut on November 16th, 2024, with special guest Scott Murawski. Blank Canvas, performed at Newburyport Brewing Company in Newburyport, Massachusetts, on May 3rd, 2025. Tough Guy, performed at The Juke in Deep River, Connecticut, on April 11th, 2025. Prepare for Liftoff, performed at Stony Creek Brewery in Brantford, Connecticut, on February 22nd, 2025. And Mystery Man, performed at Black Eyed Sally's in Hartford, Connecticut on June 28, 2025 with special guest Mark Mercier. You can find links to stream or download all of those live performances in the show notes. So that wraps up episode 63 of Hooked on Creek. If you have feedback about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please visit hookedoncreek.com and click the contact link to send a message. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in.